now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, welcome, Jane.
Thanks, Jane.
It's a pleasure.
Lovely to see you.
Yes.
2 days in a row.
I know, it must be. And you've only got another two more to do after this, so you're crossing them off.
I feel like yesterday we manifested the spirits of antisocial behaviour when we were talking about people behaving badly post-COVID, because not an hour later I got on my train back to Brighton and a youth sat opposite me vaping and shouting into his phone. And not for the first time I asked him to stop vaping.
Did you? Okay.
But for the first time he pushed back very hard.
Oh, I'm sorry. So was there an incident?
There wasn't an incident because me and the other middle-aged people just sort of laughed at him, but he did carry on vaping and shouting to his phone all the way to Brighton.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I would find that absolutely...
It was exhausting.
Yeah.
And also he was having quite an intimate chat with his girlfriend loudly on the phone, which was, as you were saying, quite amusing. I mean...
Well, as long as it was entertaining.
It was entertaining, but the pushback on the vaping was... pretty extraordinary.
And it, without being too pompous, you're not allowed to vape on a train.
No, you're not.
No.
And this was, he'd seemed to think that we were being unreasonable in our middle-aged request that he stop. And he said, why should I stop? And we said, because you're not allowed to do it on a train. And then he seemed surprised that I said he shouldn't shout on his phone in a public place either.
Gosh, you really went for it, didn't you?
I did.
Okay, well, can I just say well done?
Thanks. It got me absolutely nowhere.
Nowhere, no, but welcome to Harpies Anonymous.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Because we achieved nothing, but we enjoy failing.
I became 78% more like my mum.
Yeah, well... Yeah. There's a lot to be said for that, I'm sure. Thank you to everyone who's emailed. Jane's got some fan mail, and I'm sure... Do you want to bring it to everybody right at the start?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's dig in. Jane's got an admirer. I love the way he refers to you as Fees Locum.
Yeah, I like that.
I thought it was great.
He also does... He opens with talking about Billy Connolly doing a sketch lamenting the dour dirge of our national anthem and suggesting that a better tune would be Barwick Green. Apparently you will know this as
yes,
the Singing Tune of the Archers, which I didn't know that's what it's called.
Yeah.
And also our lovely listener says, so too is the wonderful Italian anthem when sung before the Six Nations. Anyway, back to me.
Yeah.
So Andrew does say, one final ramble in praise of Fees Locum, the other Jane. Her robust sense of humour and delivery harks back to the days when journalists did inhabit Fleet Street in a haze of cigarette smoke and liquid sandwiches at Elvino's. However, I do appreciate that she is far too young to have been around then. Andrew, thank you for that. I did sort of catch the fag end of it.
Did you?
The fag end,
literally.
When I joined the Sunday Times at the 20-nothing years old, I have to say I'm quite glad that I didn't live through those glory days, because I'd be in the Priory by about the age of 25, I think.
Well, Elvino's, I mean, I've never been in, but it was a wine bar on Fleet Street.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And
people used to just file from Elvino's.
What do you mean?
So people would go to the pub and just file their copy from the pub.
So they'd just ring
stay there
up.
All day. Yeah.
Because in those days...
Yeah, you'd ring the copy takers. So I did used to ring copy takers quite a lot from the road.
And a copy taker is someone who'd sit in front of a typewriter.
Yeah.
And just take
just
down.
Just take down what you were dictating to them.
Were they not able to correct what you did?
No. You would have to make your own errors.
Yeah, because this is...
We used to have subs, though, back in those days.
Yeah, who would then...
So sub-editors would then read... Obviously, they've fallen by the wayside in most places,
and just explain, because I'm not... Everybody understands this. I'm not really sure I do. Sub-editors rewrite or correct?
Correct.
What do they do?
Yeah, generally correct. In news, they might do a bit of rewriting. They would check the facts... correct the spelling, the grammar, but that obviously was much more important back in the day when you'd be out on a job. You wouldn't have a mobile phone or a laptop to file with. So you'd be in court and you'd have to ring your story through, dictate it to copy takers who would type it out and then send it off somehow by magic to the presses. It was something I used to have to do. Gosh, when I started at Sunday Times and I'd do jobs abroad or around the country, I didn't have a laptop and Wi-Fi. No. So you would ring copy takers with your copy, who would then type it up and send it off to the news editor. So
that's like another world.
It was another world, yeah.
Do you think the nature of writing has changed since we all were only not on manual typewriters, but were able to change as we went along?
I think definitely
it's,
so.
It's definitely, it must have changed the way we think as well.
Yeah, yeah, because you can correct all the way along. So I think, yeah, you probably did a lot more thinking beforehand.
Before you wrote it.
Yeah. Certainly, I used to write out my notes, sort of a mixture of my terrible shorthand and longhand, and I would write the story sort of as I would want to dictate it. But I think other people used to do it off the top of their heads, people
really?
Who are better news reporters than me. Yeah, absolutely. And I think now that you can self-edit, I think we probably fiddle around a bit more. It certainly slows people down, I think. You used to just have to bash it out from the pub.
Yeah, I imagine that there have been PhDs written about this, about the nature of writing changing.
I would love to know.
I mean, the great thing about this podcast is there are always people listening who know so much stuff. So let us know. By the way, almost everyone in the world was at Kew Gardens on Sunday. And I've even had images of the actual fox that I saw at Kew. I'm convinced it is this one. This is from Chris. I really enjoyed your podcast today. That's another compliment to you, Jane, isn't it? And couldn't believe it when you mentioned the fox in Kew. I was there two Sundays ago and also met a lovely fox, albeit this one seemed to be without their lovely trademark bushy tail. Oh, yeah, this fox doesn't really have a tail. I wondered if the park keepers, that is, maybe took the fox in, having rescued it. In any case, it was a very friendly fox, welcomed my curious photography and posed multiple times in between spraying every bush. Here's a snap, says Chris. Do you think they're allowed to spray the bushes? I suppose they probably are. It does look as though that fox...
He's had his tail locked off for some
has
reason,
been damaged.
Been
and has been taken in by the good people at Kew Gardens. But thank you for that.
Elaine was also there. She goes often, she said. Her daughter's a member. She regularly visits the gardens at least once a month, sometimes more. Have seen foxes on numerous occasions, usually near the pagoda. She says they're not particularly shy, but they do slink away if people approach them. And they do look very healthy with nice shiny coats, as we were saying.
Yeah.
The West London expensive foxes.
Well, we just take care of ourselves in West London.
I would also, just on the fox note, if it's okay, I'd just like to respond to a question about why I couldn't bag up my dead fox myself. So I mentioned on yesterday's podcast that a fox died in my garden about 2 years ago. And my colleague on The Times, who sits next to me and heard me wanging on about it for a whole morning, Tony Turnbull, came round to my house on his bike after work and bagged it up for me. In my defence, so...
What does our correspondent say?
Our correspondent says, why couldn't Jane M sort out the dead fox herself, i.e. dig it up, put it in a bag ready for binning, instead of relying on male colleagues to do the deed?
Well, can I just say, I would have happily relied on anyone willing to help me with that. I wouldn't have done it myself.
So I'd been home for a week with incredibly bad COVID. This was the weekend that I thought, the reason I saw the dead fox, I looked out my window and thought, I might just sit in the garden. Oh, there's a huge dead fox in my garden. I was quite pathetic with COVID, and also it was huge. And I wasn't feeling very well. So it was my first day back at work, and Tony very kindly offered. And when he came round, he said, it is massive.
Yeah.
Also, it was stiff and maggoty.
Thank you for that.
And I couldn't smell it because I had COVID.
But Tony
said, we put it in 9 bin bags. So that's how maggoty and disgusting the dead fox was. So, I'm very independent, very liberated modern woman. Mm. But to be honest, it could have been a woman who offered to help me bag up the dead fox. Yes. Anyone helping me.
Wouldn't have been this woman, I'm telling you that now.
Funnily enough, no woman offered.
Tony has more than grown in my estimation. And who is that criticism from?
Do you want me to rename them?
Well, what's their first name?
There is a first name. Caroline.
Caroline. Oh, I think you're being a bit hard on Jane there, Caroline. Or more than a bit hard, because trust me, I would have called in help from La Turnbull or anybody else willing to help me out. You mentioned antisocial. Oh, I should say, great guest. Talking of Kew Gardens, the guest on today's podcast is Caroline Quentin, and she's so interesting and lovely. And she has written a book called Drawn to the Garden, but she talks about all sorts of other stuff in the conversation that I did on the Times Radio show this afternoon, and you can hear it on this podcast today. She did seem to be a thoroughly good sort. So there's plenty about gardening in that conversation. But this is about antisocial behaviour, and this is from a listener, Leslie. I wonder what your take is on how to deal with young men who sit on public transport or walk along the street with their hands down their trousers.
I mean, did enjoy this question.
I see this now and again in London, and my first reaction is always anxiety. I'm in my 60s, and it might not be a threat to me, but my immediate feeling is to take me back to being frightened and threatened whenever I see a man groping their genitals in public. You see, I think I'm with Leslie here, and I think she's quite right to be more than affronted by this, to be honest. Whenever I say anything to my husband, he says that it's no different from seeing women adjusting their bra straps.
Completely different.
Totally different. That is distasteful and uncomfortable to witness when they're talking to you in a work meeting, but essentially harmless. But I don't feel these things are the same at all. Both might be disrespectful and a bit grubby, but I don't feel that a woman fiddling with her underwear would threaten and intimidate a man in the same way as a man openly touching his genitals is for a woman to see. Leslie, thank you. She says she appreciates the way this podcast mingles the utterly trivial with the very serious, and it's sort of what we try to do, although it's not written down anywhere. But you're right, Leslie, that's what we're trying to do. So,
why do men do that?
I don't know,
in public.
I'm not a man, but I really feel for Leslie, and I'm also a bit angry with the men who choose not to see why this is threatening.
Yeah.
If you really, really don't understand that, then you need to just have a think.
Yeah. I have to say, when I do see it, I don't personally find it particularly threatening.
I think it's a bit pathetic.
I find it pathetic, and I just think, have you got absolutely no self-control, is what I think.
Yeah.
Or no social awareness. It's back to social awareness,
I think.
It's
back to understanding that you're in the world, but so are other people.
Yeah.
And you don't actually own it.
No.
We've thrown that one open there. If anybody's got a way of dealing, and of course you're unlike, let's face it, I mean, I've been in exactly that situation. You don't say anything.
The way I'm going, I might, actually.
Okay, you
might. I'm going to start calling them out. Stop it.
Go for
it. Hand out your pants.
I'll just stand behind you and go,
go on, Jane. There was a fair amount of other people doing that on the train last night, actually. Well, they were sort of looking and tutting, and then I jumped
in. The thing is, they're just
they backed me up.
Cowardy custards, aren't they? They want to agree with. They want to be you, but they lack the cojones.
Yeah.
Never know how to say that.
Just frustration.
Yeah.
This is also an interesting point. Again, it's sort of on the behavioural rules. Dear Jane and Jane, I was surprised to hear you mention Travis Kelce on yesterday's podcast. I take it neither of you watched the Super Bowl.
Nope.
What with the time difference and the good sense you had to spend your Sundays otherwise, Diggerland and Kew Gardens seem much more wholesome choices. But I'm curious if either of you saw the clip of Kelce's shocking behaviour towards his 65-year-old coach, Andy Reid. I didn't see the clip, but I did see the picture.
I'm aware of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Our listener says, as an elementary school teacher and a mother, my jaw dropped as the scene played out and I thought of all the young kids and teens, my own included, watching and witnessing Mr. Kelce's uncontrollable rage towards Mr. Reid. I was equally shocked that Kelce was back in the game soon after his ugly outburst, and further that more was not made of it in the media, and that Andy Reid explained Kelce's behaviour away, saying, he keeps me young. He tested that hip out. He caught me off balance. Normally I'd give him a little bit, but I didn't have any feet under me. What, says our listener, why is this acceptable behaviour in this day and age? And why is Taylor Swift associated with this brute of a man? With a display like this on national television, what chance do we have of teaching our children good sportsmanship and respect for one's coach for the sport they play? Not to mention that fans of Taylor may feel some concern for her safety after witnessing Kelce's volatile behaviour. I know my daughter and her friend who were watching voiced it, she says.
Really?
Okay. I think that's really interesting.
I do too.
I mean, people behave aggressively in sport. I mean, that's part of some
certainly
games.
In that sport.
Certainly in that sport. But that is a very interesting point that nobody really did pick up on that. Certainly not in the British press, I don't think.
They didn't. I also read Andy Reid's explanation, justification for his star player's behaviour, and I thought that was a bit odd as well. What do we know about the roughy-tufty world of the NFL? Nothing.
Well, no, I know. There's a lot of head injuries involved. Yeah. I mean, basically, you're just running fast at someone else and trying to give them a head injury. It's something that's always put me off it slightly. But
I think the current media narrative is Travis Kelce good thing because of the association with Taylor Swift.
I think it's really interesting that our listener's daughter and her friend actually voiced it, that they picked up on that while watching it. And they certainly wouldn't have been the only ones if that's how young women are interpreting it.
Well, I think, unfortunately for them, they're very much alert to that sort of thing, aren't they? Do I think Taylor and Kelce will go on to be married for decades? No.
I think you're not alone in that. She'll get another couple of albums out of it, hopefully.
The woman is a genius. I don't say that lightly. I really do think she is.
I was booking my accommodation today for my Stockholm trip to see Taylor.
Oh, yes, you got an early, didn't you?
I did. Mm. Yeah.
I'm still hoping. My daughter's got tickets for Liverpool, and you'd think that she'd want to take her mother with her, but so far.
Are you put your name in the ballot for that ticket,
well,
have you?
I just said quite loaded things like I gave birth to you. If it hadn't been for me, you wouldn't be there. I mean, another obviously unnecessary and passive-aggressive, over-emotional things. It's not just anyone who listens to Off Air, it's celebrity people. When I was born in 1978, says our correspondent, at Salisbury Hospital, I weighed 10 pounds, 11 ounces. Whether such a weight was record-breaking or not was not recorded, but I was at the time the longest baby ever born at Salisbury Hospital. I had been due on Christmas Day, but arrived 10 days late. My mother always said I was made of mince pies because she tucked in with abandon during those frustrating overdue days. I was her second baby, and I should say she did go on to have a third. But do you know how long she was?
How long?
23 inches, which is nearly 2 foot.
Oof.
I mean,
that's so long for a baby.
Inclusive. That is absolutely enormous. Are you still tall?
Yeah, I'm interested in that.
And can you let us know?
Are her parents tall?
We do need to know more. She doesn't want her name
mentioned. All the measurements, please.
Fair enough. But, I mean, it's a good day when you get an email from someone who was, perhaps even for a short time, the longest baby ever born at Salisbury Hospital. Congratulations.
That record has probably been smashed now by all those tall youths.
Tall posh youths.
Tall posh youths. Yeah, tall conservative posh youths.
Yes, it's quite possible.
Cluttering things up.
Yeah.
So this is about our library books conversation.
Oh, yeah.
And the possible previous readers and comments found in them. So our listener, who wants to remain anonymous, said that she, I'm presuming she was a she, wanted to share that many years ago I'd split up with a partner and he wrote a very passionate letter following the end of the relationship. And when I say passionate, I mean steamy, says our listener. I didn't want to destroy it, but I felt uncomfortable about it, so I stashed it between the pages of the book. No idea which book. And I'm sure you know what's coming next. I had a big clear out prior to moving and sent a load of books to the charity shop. When I realised I might have sent the letter, I went through all the books I'd kept, but no luck. Now, says our listener, whenever I'm in a charity shop looking at books, I often wonder about the person who might have read my letter and what they might have thought about my previous love life.
They were probably very jealous.
I mean, I'm sure they loved it. On a related note, our listener says, you must watch One Day on Netflix, which is very beautiful and so much better than the film from 2011. And I hard agree.
I've seen one episode.
I've watched 7 because I'm rationing myself. I could easily binge it
how many are there?
14.
They've done it all
okay, the way through.
And do they age them really well?
So far, they're still in their 20s. Okay, so, right. But I've had pre-heartbreak from like minute one of episode one because they've done such a good job.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
Carol Midgley said when she watched it to review it, you know, she's going to have to watch it all again.
Really?
Because she said it's that good. She said yesterday she'd have given it, today I think she said, if she could have given it 6 stars, she would.
She would have done. Yes, yeah. I saw that. She really was completely bold. Absolutely. She's not that easily impressed, is she?
Not easily impressed at all.
You said that very passionately. No. We'll bring Caroline Quentin in a moment, but I just, Netflix is a universal thing, it's a global thing. So if you get the chance to see One Day, I do agree. It is. I'm going to try and eke it out for as long as possible. This is an important email, and I think it will chime with a number of people listening. I'm in my 50s, and I listened to your email from Colette, which brought to mind others who shared their challenges with loneliness and making friends in later life. My husband and I care for our adult son who has a severe learning disability. Now, in the beginning, we did acquire something of a circle of friends from the school gates linked to our older daughter. When our son came along, they would invite us to things, but due to his needs, one of us was always on guard following him around, not able to just let the kids play while the adults chatted. Gradually, we found we were invited less and less, and once our daughter left primary school, we were essentially ghosted. Our son did go to a wonderful school for children with special needs, but we struggled to make any real connections there. The way we have to live our lives to meet our son's needs, work commitments, not having family remotely nearby, and the lack of support available, don't get me started on that, she says, means that we have very few friends and they live afar. It is not easy for us to just join a class. I'm so lucky to have my gorgeous husband and fortunate that we still enjoy each other's company after 30 years. But I worry about his loneliness too, as I think it's even harder for chaps to make friends. I don't mean for this to be a whinge fest, but just wanted to highlight the isolation that being any sort of carer brings. I'm sorry to hear about that, and I do thank you very much for emailing in, because it's a missed contribution to this conversation.
100%.
And I can well imagine how it happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
And those of us who, you know, maybe have been in a situation where we could have reached out and didn't, well, we need to have a word with ourselves. And I hope that will mean a lot to those people in similar situations. So thank you for that. And thank you for just reminding us of how sometimes you've got to be adaptable.
Yeah.
In your friendships and accept that other people have got limitations that they didn't choose.
Absolutely. And just people of all ages and all circumstances, you care for other people.
Yeah.
Young anyway. People and older people.
So thank you very much for that. And if anybody's similar concerns or living through something similar, do let us know. janeandfee@times.radio.
Can I read a little bit of fan mail to you?
Yeah.
Just before we move on. Because I feel like, so. I had the fan mail at the top of
this. You did, and I thought I was very gracious.
Very gracious. But... Here's one for you.
Am I going to be put in the House of Lords? Have they asked you to break it to me?
Who would write to me if they were going to put you in the House of Lords? I don't know who that would be.
No, okay, you're just ruining
Anyway, this is not about the House of Lords yet. I'm hoping that'll be by Thursday. So this is actually from Rabina, who had the Knowsley Safari Park dream about you.
Oh, yes, that's right.
You've been back
in
her dreams.
It was quite erotic, wasn't it?
It was erotic, yeah. Yes. So, dear Jane and Fee, thought I'd share my second dream about Jane. Sorry, Fee, you didn't feature. Doesn't matter, she's not here.
Yeah, she's pure.
This time, we were in a car with Jane driving while I was cooking roast potatoes.
Oh, lovely.
The oven was conveniently located in the middle section, under the radio and just in front of the gear stick. I think you'll agree, an otherwise underutilised area of a car. It's true, I don't know why there aren't more ovens in cars.
Yeah, there should be.
You did a couple of illegal left turns, sounds about right, and drove the wrong way around a roundabout, yep, but you weren't at all flustered. My main concern was my potatoes not crisping up in time for our arrival. I've no idea where we were going, but it looked a bit like the Peak District.
Ooh.
I think this dream was triggered by a combination of listening to your recent chat about driving in Paris while watching the Hairy Bikers new show and Amanda and Alan hamming it up in Italy. Anyway, can't wait for our next adventure in my progesterone-addled brain. All the best, Bina. P.S. still available for our Knowsley Safari Park trip whenever you're ready.
Well, listen, if you're going to chuck in some roasters, then I'll give it due consideration. I'm just incredibly flattered to be involved in anybody's subconscious meanderings.
I had a dream the other night involving Times Radio.
Oh, yes.
That I was sitting in for Hugo Rifkin, but the studio was actually the 11th floor, not the 14th floor, and I was running around trying to find some headphones. And,
yes.
Yeah. Anyway, but, you know, I wish I had dreams about you and roast potatoes is what I'm saying.
Try harder.
I just have terror dreams about 14th floor and 11th floor situations.
Well, I mean, that is, can I say that? So you're becoming, you know what you're becoming? I'm
anxious.
Pointing at you. No, you're becoming a broadcaster. Because those are the dreams of broadcasters.
So basically, Danny was talking in my ear and I couldn't find any microphones or headphones that worked for 20 minutes. Oh. And it was dead air for 20 minutes.
Radio has well and truly wormed its way into your head.
I used to just worry about missing deadlines.
Not anymore.
Now it's everything.
It's you're just an omnivorous media beast. I was going to say tart, and I just drew back.
But then you did.
Yeah, I just have. Our big guest today is the... And I really enjoyed talking to her, actually. Caroline Quentin. She's been in so much stuff on the telly. I'll ramble through some of them. Blue Murder, The Lazarus Project. We talk a bit about that. That's a very, very expensive-looking Sky show available now. Men Behaving Badly, of course. And she's made loads of documentaries about all sorts of stuff. But she's now written a book called Drawn to the Garden. She's also done some wonderful illustrations for it. And she's taking it on tour. She's taking this kind of concept on tour with no less a person than Maria McCurlane. So I asked her to tell me a little bit about that.
I'm doing a short tour first of bookshops. So hello, bookshop people. I'm coming to you alone.
Because they are so important.
I'm doing a lot of independent bookshops first over the next couple of months. And then further down the line, Maria is going to interview me. I've known her for 50 years. So that should be hilarious.
Yeah. Yes, she's a very funny woman.
She's a darling.
And actually, her book was good.
It's great.
Yeah, I loved her book.
Her book's Bumps in the Road,
Well done. Let's promote it again.
No, it's good. It's really good.
No, it is very good. Well, we've mentioned that now. We can move on from Maria McCurlane and her charms. But I'm glad that you're doing it with her. That's brilliant. So your garden now is how many acres? 2 acres, is that right?
Well, I've got a couple of acres of veg and fruit plot. I mean, the garden is bigger than that because I've got a big pond and things like that. But the bit I sort of concentrate on, ostensibly it started on Instagram during COVID. And I'd come in from a day in the garden and say to my husband, oh, I've been pleaching, I've been planting, and he said, I'm just not interested.
Yeah, go away.
Go away. Go and find someone who cares. And so I did, and I went out onto the internet and I found an Instagram following who are genuinely love talking about gardening. So I found my people.
Yeah.
And then I was encouraged to, because I draw and paint as well, to write the book. Really, it's sort of a gardening book, but it's sort of...
Well, it's a bit more than that. I mean, we'll get onto the rest of it. But it's in Devon, your plot.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Is there something specific I should know about Devon soil or the sea air? What's significant?
Well, I'm mid-Devon, so I'm not near the sea, but I'm on heavy clay. A lot of people around me are... When you see that red, very iron-coloured soil, it's thick and heavy. It's very nutritious. I mean, it's brilliant for growing things, but you have to add a lot of things to make it friable. So all of us Devon gardeners know that we have to add manure.
Do you? OK. Mm-hmm. Well, there's plenty of that around in Devon, presumably.
It certainly is,
Okay, and you're very honest in the book because you make clear that actually your husband does help a little bit, doesn't he, Sam?
Yeah.
And then you do have a gardener too.
Well, Anthony's not... He's always said he's not a gardener. He's a countryman. He lays hedges. He uses the tractor. He'll dig a trench. And he always said, I'm not a gardener. I don't want to be a gardener. I'm not a gardener. And he's... I hope you won't mind me saying, Anthony's in his late 70s. And he's a country person. But he helps me do things if I'm away.
Yeah.
So if I need work done, he will help me.
Because people will be asking, how does this star of stage and screen manage the garden and do everything else? So that the answer is countryman, Anthony.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he gives me a day a week. I mean, the rest of the time I either do it myself or it doesn't get done. And that's also true of my book. It's about failure as well as success. And it's about forgiving ourselves those weeks when we don't water or, you know, plant on and things. We're all just amateurs, really.
This is quite significant, but I think quite hopeful, but also a bit sad time of the year, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because things are sort of... I mean, my sole gardening anecdote is that I went to Kew Gardens on Sunday, partly in preparation for this encounter, and there were crocuses poking up and some snowdrops around. Camellias are kind of on the go, aren't they? But it's still a little bit quiet.
It is. I mean, I've noticed in London, actually, because, of course, the microclimate here is quite a lot water.
Yeah.
And loads of daffodils, loads of crocuses everywhere. And in Devon, we're just seeing the tail end of our snowdrops. So, it's a joyful time, but I'm still a little bit desperate for the dawn chorus, for April to come and for the blossom. Yeah.
Yeah, blossom is definitely weirdly out in some parts. So I live in West London. There are some trees that have got blossom, but then you go down another street, there's none at all.
It's those that have got the heating on and those that haven't, probably.
It must be that, yeah. You also have a pond in your garden, don't you? And I think that's because ponds deliver. But what does a pond give you?
Any body of water in a garden will bring everything with it. I mean, you put water in and it brings wildlife. So even a small body of water will bring toads and newts and frogs. It'll bring the birds. It'll bring insects hovering above, which will feed the birds. slow worms, things like that. Also, you know, hedgehogs, all those kind of things come into the garden because of water. So if you have, I mean, even honestly, people just on my account just say, put a bowl of water in and suddenly I've got wildlife in the garden. So if you can put anything in your garden, an old bucket, dustbin, dig something in. I mean, I'm lucky I've got a large sort of, yeah, I suppose it's a pond.
Well, you swim in it, don't you?
Yeah. So I suppose it is bigger than a pond. I don't know. It's almost a lake, but not quite a lake.
Not quite. It feels a bit grand.
Yeah, it does. It's a big pond and I do swim in it, yeah.
Okay. You also claim to occasionally garden with no clothes on.
No, I do.
Do you?
I absolutely do. Oh, yeah. I mean, I live in the country.
Do you do that, Caroline?
Well, because if you get up in the morning and it's warm, it doesn't happen very often, obviously, but and you put your pinny on and then no one's going to see you, it's just so lovely to get the air on your body. I love it. And I don't, because I'm not surrounded by people. I mean, I'm not suggesting people in terraced houses, you know, stop. Well, I actually, well, no, do start taking
illegal?
Your clothes off. I think probably not.
Well, I think the pinny might offer a degree of protection. Yeah, not least for the neighbours.
No, exactly. Yeah, exactly. A sort of gardening apron's a good thing, particularly if you're pruning, obviously.
Yeah, indeed. Now, your book starts with reference to your mum. Now, I didn't know this, and she was somebody who did have, you know, struggles with her mental health over the years, and she was taken to psychiatric hospitals from time to time.
A lot, yeah, quite a lot, actually. I mean, I think nowadays we call it bipolar. Yeah. When I was a child growing up, it was called manic depression, which just alludes to the two extremes of the experience for people with it. And yeah, my mum spent a lot of time in the big psychiatric hospital, not that far from where I grew up. And had ECT, electric shock treatment, and was on a lot of those drugs for her, lithium and those kind of drugs for her health, her mental health. And so, yes, I mean, I grew up very much in that environment with someone who was very ill, I mean, really very ill. And I think when you're little, you don't know anything else. You only know what you know. And my mum was, you know, absent quite a lot. And my father was absent quite a lot because he was flying aeroplanes. He was British Airways, BUA as it was in those days. So so it was a big part of my childhood was being alone quite a lot, actually. And I think that's formed who I am in lots of ways. But I think it's also made that link for me with nature. I think I very early on understood that there was a peace there, peace and comfort and continuity, actually. It was very important for me.
And you say in the book that you would visit your mum and that there would be a big garden because I very early on in my journalism career, sounds very rather grand. Well, it's not grand as your pond. I went to visit one of those huge psychiatric hospitals just before it closed. Yeah. It was on the cusp of the Care in the Community initiative.
Yeah.
And I imagine the place I visited was rather like the institution that your mum spent time in.
Yeah.
Because it was enormous.
Huge. I mean, huge. They were villages. They were actually villages. Yeah. And I, you know, subsequently have looked into the hospital where my mum was, and it was an entire village. It had its own laundry, its own theatre, its own ballroom. It had occupational therapy. It had huge dining rooms. It employed thousands of people. I mean, these were huge. It's just, you know, and I mean, I'm not an authority about mental health, but there was, I think there's something to be said for people being looked after in a safe space. I mean, there were locked wards, of course, there were, and people who were, you know, my mum on occasion was sectioned under the Mental Health Act and things. And but there was something to be said for that because, you know, the grounds were extraordinary. I mean, so beautiful. Huge swathes of kind of daisies and trees, had its own graveyard, had a beautiful church. I don't know, there's a kind of, I think they are a loss to us. I don't know, I'm sure people will shoot me down in flames, but there's something to be said, I think, maybe.
I think the conversation around them might just be changing for precisely the reasons that you've outlined. It'd be very interesting to see what happens, and I'm not an authority on this either, I need to say, but there'll be people listening who do know more, so please do email janeandfee@times.radio if you do. And I think it's also worth saying, because it's in the book, that your mum did make progress.
My mother, lived well beyond her quite extreme mental ill health and had a very fulfilled, joyful, wonderful life beyond it, which is, you know, I mean, more than can be said for a lot of people, and you know, I'm so grateful for that, and I know she was too, a massively positive, funny, clever, bright woman, sort of had that time to be that woman.
Yeah. Did she live long enough to see your showbiz career?
Yes.
Oh,
she,
brilliant.
She
okay.
absolutely yeah. did. Yeah, yeah. She's not. She only died 15 years ago or something. But so yeah, no. She saw the me working hard to have the career, and you know, and everything that's come after.
Afterwards.
You know, a bit like you.
You've still got a career.
Career being a brand, the grandest word,
just,
isn't it?
If we were men, we probably wouldn't.
We wouldn't bat an eyelid, probably, would we?
No, we're just saying a bit pompous about talking about it. But anyway,
our work.
Yes,
our
work. But hashtag not all men. She said very, very quickly.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com. I'm talking to Caroline Quentin, and I have taken particular note of a recipe involving courgettes in her book, and she told me a bit more about it.
Well, I get a glut of courgettes, so I'm queen of courgettes.
What is it about the courgette? Because, I mean, they grow, abundance doesn't do it justice, does it?
It doesn't. Well, except some years when, you know, when I say, oh, I've got terrible courgettes, and people go, yeah, me too. So I don't know. It's in the lap of the gods, all of it. But yeah, I've got lots of recipes for courgettes. We have to have gardeners.
They don't actually taste of anything, Caroline. That's the problem. Controversial,
well,
but I've just lobbed it in.
They're not flavourful, is what I'd say.
No, you do have to add something to a courgette to make it worthwhile.
It's true.
So there seems to be quite a contrast between the Caroline at home, pottering, sometimes naked, sometimes not, in her garden, and then the person who, I mean, you lap up all sorts of, the Lazarus Project, for example, is, I tried to understand what it was about this morning, and I did get a bit, I mean, it's very, just set the scene. What is it?
The Lazarus Project.
It's a very expensive show.
It's a massive Sky series, and it's about a character, Papacied, who plays a character who inadvertently falls into working with an organisation who can alter time. And on the 1st of July every year, they can make a choice about whether or not to turn the clock back, and they can stop world events. And Joe Barton, who wrote our series, did predict... absolutely predicted COVID, the Ukrainian war.
Wow.
That, you know, I mean, it covers all of that, and we were shooting it long before any of that happened. So it's about making choices about whether or not, what is the moral dilemma, when is it a good time to turn back time, I suppose that's what it's about. And Joe Barton explores that thoroughly and humorously, and you know, and it's a sexy, funny science fiction thing.
And you play an authority figure, don't you?
I know.
Who gets to be... I'm very jealous of this because I've always wanted to be called Mom. Yeah. And you're called Mom.
And it's always so weird. Funnily enough, I just ran in... Minutes ago, I ran to Anjali, who Mahindra, who plays Archie in the show, and and I loved it. I love, you know, they're all these gorgeous young actors. They're really marvellous, funny, clever, erudite people, and I'm a bumbling gardening
idiot.
But it's true, and they're all calling me yes, mom, no, mom. It was great. It was a great thing to walk in. You know, I've had a couple of years of people really showing me the respect I don't deserve.
That's exactly what I want.
Yeah,
bring it on.
Yeah,
and obviously, you know, Men Behaving Badly is where a lot of people will remember you with huge fondness. And the classic question about that show now is, could you make it now? And I guess you couldn't, but you shouldn't, because it was of its time.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it was getting pretty past its sort of sell-by date by the last series, really. So we'd be pushing our luck 20, 30 years later.
About the last series?
I don't know. I just think, you know, you plough that furrow, and there comes a point where you just go, think we've done this now, and the world moved on mercifully. And I say that, actually, I've got two young people. I don't know if the world has moved on enough. Probably, you know, I think, I don't know. We didn't have social media in those days, and I'm not sure. There are lots of reasons why we couldn't make it now, but
So some of the stuff that felt faintly charming and true to life back then would be a bit tawdry now.
I think it would stick in one's craw, actually. I really do. And I mean, listen, it's still funny. I'm not taking that away from it. People still come up to me, young people still come up to me in the street and say they find it funny. Old people come up to me in the street and say they find it funny, and they know. So listen, it's fine. But it was so much of its era.
Right. And were you at any time when you were doing it uncomfortable with it? I mean, you hinted that perhaps towards the end you definitely were.
No, I think I was always. I mean, I was fighty. I was fighty in the rehearsal room. I remember saying when we did the first, what do you call it, pilot, saying very loudly, I am not here to serve up feed lines to men. I'm just not here to do that. And which was pretty bold, given that no one knew who I was or cared. Yeah. But I felt very strongly then that actually there was an opportunity in that scenario to give the women a voice. I mean, it was never going to be as loud a voice, but at least it could be as funny. And actually, what's really interesting in comedies, I think, is if you're funny, you can say almost anything. But if you're just someone feeding lines to somebody else, you don't exist. And that is still true today, I think.
Is there enough comedy on television and elsewhere driven by women and the female experience, do you think?
No. I mean, I think, you know, we can look to Sharon Horgan and say thank you, Sharon, for doing, you know, 50% of the work. But there are other, you know, great shows out there, you know.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Alma's Not Normal. Those kind of shows are extraordinarily good. I saw a great play last night. Have you seen Till the Stars Come Down?
I haven't. What's it about?
It's about three sisters, and it is written by Beth Steele. It's so... I cannot recommend it highly enough. The writing is sparkling, and it's about women's experience, written by a woman in a way that I haven't seen in years on stage. It's so good.
Just a brief outline of the plot?
It's set on the day of a wedding of one of the sisters. The mother has died. It's so funny and good. I really recommend it.
Okay,
and that's way off course. I shouldn't be talking about that.
No, that's fine. Is it short?
Yeah, it's 2.5 hours with a 20. It's a half an hour interval and 2 hours. It's short. It feels short.
It feels short. Okay, that's fine.
It's really, it's blissful entertainment.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, no, we'll take it. And the name of the play again?
The Stars Come Down, I think it is called, Well, the National Theatre.
People are loving your interview, and they are, I'm sure they'll take a recommendation from you, so don't worry about that.
Good.
Also, it's stuff in the book as well, not just about gardening, but about wildlife. And I feel so out of my depth here, but I mean, I cannot tell, if I'm honest, a blue tit from a sparrow from a blackbird.
No.
I might be able to spot a blackbird, in fairness.
I think you
but,
would.
But you really do... You can tell the difference, and you take huge comfort from their presence, don't you?
Yeah. I started birding very early on, actually. I was partly due to my mum's ill health, I think. I was sent to boarding school just moments after my 10th birthday. And I met someone called Sarah Dear Jones, who was a really lovely woman, child at the time. But she was a birder, and she was a member of the RSPB.
Can I just say, you must have been outliers at your boarding school, you and your friend Sarah,
We really were. And okay. In fact, we were mostly illegal because we were out of bounds, apart from being outliers. We used to sneak off together and go. It was gorgeous, though, watching. We had We watched everything. We watched all the birds. It was great.
That's actually really lovely. And you don't... it sounds to me like you're speaking up in support of boarding school, or at least in your case. Would that be fair?
Yes. I mean, I don't know. Again, I don't... I was very, very lonely, and I was quite sad and quite scared a lot of the time. But I had nature to go to. I turned to nature, and the school was set in very beautiful grounds again. So, you know, once again, you know, a bit of greenery can, even when you're 10 and really homesick and lonely and quite scared of lots of stuff, if you're watching a family of blue tits feeding on, you know, worms as their mum and dad bring them in, you know, it's like everything's okay, even if it's just for that half an hour or whatever. There is so much solace, and I know this from people talking to me, there is so much solace from nature, whether it be birds or water or planting things, trees, you know, I think we need it.
Yeah, well, I think we really do. And if people want to follow you on Instagram, I should say we've had an email from Cher, who's one of our regular listeners over in the States, and she says, I follow Caroline on Insta. It is so soothing, and she really enjoys it.
Thank you very much.
But she does live in a land where Donald Trump could be the head of state in a year or so.
I have a lot
time.
Of people in America I bet you follow do. Me, actually.
So where do they find you on Instagram?
It's called CQ Gardens. I know you were at Kew Gardens recently, but it's C with a Q as a Q.
That.
Yeah, CQ Gardens.
CQ Gardens. Yeah. That was Caroline Quentin, and her book Drawn to the Garden is out this week. And just thinking about what she said about her mum, and her mum stays in one of those absolutely huge psychiatric hospitals, I think Caroline felt that the hospital had actually been very much the right place for her mum, and actually, Jane, a safe place for her mum, and a place that really helped her. There'll be plenty of people listening right now who've got rather different memories of those institutions, which was kind of why they were all closed down and we started this idea of care in the community in the 1990s. I'm talking about Britain here, obviously. So I really would welcome anybody else's memories of those sorts of institutions. Jane and Fee at times.radio. Caroline is lovely. I kind of expected her to be, and she turned out to be, so that's very nice.
I'd quite like to go on tour with her and Maria. I think that would be an awful lot of fun.
I mean,
you might end up in a foreign jail after a tour, but I think it'd be a lot of fun,
I think there would be some laughs. Yeah. You're quite right. And actually, I just wanted to say at the end, while we were doing this podcast, we got the news that Steve Wright has died. And Steve Wright, the Radio 2 presenter, and actually, he was only 69, and I met him a couple of times. And can I just say, I'm just really sorry. Yeah. And I know Fee would also be really sorry, because we were very occasionally on his programme, and it was a big, big thrill if you're an absolute anorak like me. He was a true genius of radio.
Absolute titan of radio.
Yeah, he really was. And he just made so many people's days. You know, he was on in the afternoon on Radio 1 and Radio 2. Certainly his style was completely unique to Britain when he first started. And I just think he will have touched the lives of loads of people. So rest in peace, Steve. I'm really sorry to hear about that.
Absolutely.
Jane, thank you. And we'll be back tomorrow.
We're bringing the shutters down on another episode of the internationally acclaimed podcast Off Air with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
Our Times Radio producer is Rosie Cutler, and the podcast executive producer is Henry Tribe.
But don't forget that you can get another 2 hours of us every Monday to Thursday afternoon here on Times Radio. We start at 3 p.m. and you can listen for free on your smart speaker. Just shout Play Times Radio at it. You can also get us on DAB radio in the car or on the Times Radio app whilst you're out and about being extremely busy.
And you can follow all our tosh behind the mic and elsewhere on our Instagram account. Just go onto Insta and search for Jane and Fee and give us a follow.
So in other words, we're everywhere, aren't we, Jane?
Pretty much.
Everywhere. Thank you for joining us. And we hope you can join us again on Off Air very soon.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.